My name is Vanilla White. I was born in Manchester, Kentucky, November 6, 1925. I'm the daughter of Harrison Potter and Clarice White.
Vanilla, could you tell me a little bit about your parents? What did your father do for a living?
My father was a coal miner, basically. My mother was an elementary school teacher.
What mine did your father work in? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Was it here in Manchester?
It was in Manchester.
Okay. In Manchester.
In Clay County.
And your mother taught school?
Yeah, the elementary school.
Do you remember what school that was?
The first one I remember was Chestnut Hill School. And then she taught at... We called it Potter's Chapel, and some people refer to the place as Goose Creek or Goose Rock. But
and those were African American. Was it first through high school or elementary?
At first, it was just first through eighth. Somewhere along there, they added on to high school. It was always a real small school.
A one-room schoolhouse.
One-room schoolhouse. With the pot-belly stove and the bucket of water with the dipper that everybody used.
Were either of those Rosenwald schools?
No.
No, they were... Okay. Mm. And how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have one sister and one whole brother and one half-brother.
And were your parents originally, were both of them originally from Clay County, or did they move here?
My mother was born in Knox County, Barberville. She came to Manchester as a teacher, met my dad, and everything followed naturally. She got married and had three kids.
So your father was already here in Clay County?
He was born here.
Can you remember back when you were young, some of the other African-American families that you grew up with? I know that when I visited you last time, we found a picture of Sophie Word. So there were the Words.
That's right.
Do you remember Sophie Word at all?
I remember her. She was an old lady. I thought ancient at that time. She had white hair. And we always called her Aunt Soap. And I found out later that she really was an aunt, but I don't know, still don't know the connection.
But she was really related
to you
somehow.
She was really related.
And Sophie was quite an amazing woman. From what I understand from documents I've read, she had been born into slavery.
Born in slavery.
And was, of course, by the time that you were young, you remember she had been freed. Did you have any recognition of people of that generation of what slavery was when you were that young?
No, I didn't. I had no idea. There was another lady lived here in Clay County who was Jemima Gilbert, and she had been a child during slavery, but I don't, I remember her. She lived to be over 100 years old, but I didn't know too much about the details of any of that.
You just knew them as old women?
As old, yeah, very old ladies, I thought. But my dad, I knew his father, Barry Potter, but even he didn't know his mother. She had died when he was an infant. So I've not been able to find anything about her except he called her Emily Lucas. We found records of their Barry and Emma's marriage, and her name was really Emma Bates. And so after that, we haven't been able to find anything about her except that marriage record. And my grandfather remarried after she died. He married a woman named Fanny Little. Mm-hmm. And had several more children. There were three with Emma, my dad, and his sisters, two sisters. And one sister died as a child, the other sister lived to be an old lady. Mm-hmm. And just this past weekend, I met one of his sisters, some of his sister's family. Mm. She had a daughter named Carrie who married a man named Robert Pennington. Mm-hmm. And they moved to Indiana, and I hadn't seen them since they were little girls. Mm. Didn't even know who they were. I knew who they were when they told me, but I hadn't seen them in, I guess, a good 50 years. They stopped by.
Mm. Were they here for the homecoming?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Do you remember any of the other families that would have lived with you or around you when you were young? You mentioned the name Pennington. That's a family that goes back in Clay County, isn't it?
Okay, next door. Mm-hmm. It was Lawrence and Viola Pennington, and they had a big family of children. And Lawrence's mother was Ethel. She was a Pennington, but she married a Hipshire. Hmm. And some of those are still alive. And I went to school with some of the Hipshire kids, and I were about the same age, so we all went to school together. Mm. And I found recently that this lady named Gertha Clark, I'd known her all of my life, mm-hmm. but I didn't know that she was related to me. And I was thinking about, you know, all my relatives were gone from Manchester. Mm-hmm. And then I found out that she's a cousin. Mm. She and her daughter, Ann Lee. And I always liked to visit her. She was so jolly and happy. I don't care what event was going on. I mean, it could be a funeral or whatever, but she always found something to kind of lighten up everybody's burdens. Mm. And I had started to go visit her every week till I got sick and I can't walk that far anymore. But then there was the mother of the lady who lived next door, Viola. Mm-hmm. I found out long ago that they were related. Mm. And they were all good friends. They'd all lived right there together, you know, the same little neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
Where was that neighborhood?
It's downtown, before you get down to the downtown part of Manchester. Mm-hmm. It's on Town Branch.
On Town Branch, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, at that time, was there sort of an African-American neighborhood, or did people live spread out?
I think Town Branch, mm-hmm. people used to refer to as, that's the colored town up mm-hmm. there. I think mostly, at that time, there weren't too many people really live, you know, I mean, it wasn't populated like now with right. the house and the apartments and all that. So my son and I had started working on genealogy, and we found out that on this road, there was the little family. It seemed like they would, you know, the dad would build a house, mm-hmm. and then on that same land there'd be two or three of his kids, and they'd build a little house, and everybody kind of lived, you know, close. Mm-hmm. And over on the other side of the hill, it's 421 Highway now, there were some black families. But all the kids I went to school with, we were looking at some school pictures. Mm-hmm. And I was I think about 10th, 9th, 8th, to 9th, 7th, 8th grade. And I kept looking at these pictures and trying to remember. But just about everybody on that picture's gone. Mm. I don't know, they died young. I say, I was in that group, but I'm still sitting here for some reason. There's hardly any schoolmates, friends or relatives left.
Mm. How old are you, Vanilla?
I am 79.
79, almost 80.
Right? Almost 80. It's breathing down my neck.
It's coming. Was the population of African Americans who lived in Manchester very large when you grew up?
Not large. No. There's less now, but
there
was
now.
Never really a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And would most of the people be doing the type of work that your father did as far as the men go? Were most
the
people mining?
Coal mining and mm-hmm. farming. Pretty much. There's never been really... I guess coal mining's about the only industry they had around here then. Mm-hmm.
And were they able to stay in Manchester, or did some of them have to go down to Harlan? Or
some of them went to Harlan. Mm-hmm.
Do you know where they would have gone in Harlan?
In Harlan County, mm-hmm. there was Lynch mm-hmm. and Benham, I remember. Mm-hmm. The towns where my relatives went, my mother's people from Barberville. That's where they moved, finally moved, and coal kind of closed out up this way. Mm-hmm. But Daddy mostly just stayed here.
Do you remember anything about your father being a miner, what that life was like for him?
I think he enjoyed it, but it was dangerous, and mm-hmm. he didn't like being so dirty all the time. Here in the house, when they finally ran the water up, city water up this way, and they put in bathrooms, they didn't really want the bathroom close to the house. You know, it was always the outhouse, and it built up the hill someplace. But they ran the water up this way, and Mama had a couple of bathrooms put in. They weren't too happy about having you. We don't want that in the house. So they put two in the basement. And she had made him a special shower on the wall, and she says, "Now, honey, look, you take your shower over there, and then you can go in the other bathroom and take a bath if you want to." But she wanted him to wash that coal dust off mm-hmm. before he went all over the place. And he worked there until I was a little kid, 6 or 7, and he started to work for Levi Hensley in the grocery store. They sold some groceries, but mostly clothing, I guess general merchandise.
And that was here downtown?
Downtown.
And what did he do for them?
He was a clerk. And
he was a clerk, okay.
Cleaned up and, whatever he needed to do. Mm-hmm. He worked there then until when I went away to college, I think, when he worked there, he was still working there then. Mm.
And your mother then was a school teacher.
She was a teacher.
Was it rare for women at that time to be, educated? Was it a rare thing for her to have been a teacher, or was that a common profession for women?
Well, either a nurse or a teacher, they thought that's okay. Mm-hmm. And the ones that hadn't finished school and stuff, they were like housekeepers or cleaning mm-hmm. women or whatever. Mm-hmm. But she taught.
Where had she been educated at?
She went to Lincoln Institute.
It's
near Louisville.
Mm-hmm. Up in Shelbyville?
In Shelbyville.
And that had been a bit worse.
And then she went to college for, I guess... Altogether, it ended up to be like 2 years. Mm-hmm. After she had kids, she'd go to, summer schools and stuff.
Where did she go to college at?
Kentucky State College. That's what it was then. Mm-hmm. Now it's Kentucky State University.
In Frankfort.
Mm-hmm.
And that has always been a African-American college.
Always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she would have been going to college in the late 1910s or 1920s.
I see, Mama was born in 1900.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been...
Oh, okay. It would have been much
later. It was after she was married and after I was born in 25.
Okay.
So it would have been probably 1930s mm-hmm. when she went.
So did she have to commute up to Frankfort?
No, she went up there and stayed in the dorm.
Okay. And then who took care of...
And he and a couple of his sisters took care of the three kids
okay.
here. We did that one year, and then the next year he says... he was just moved the whole family to Frankfort, so we all went and stayed that summer.
Hmm.
That was my first taste of being outside the hills.
Did it make a big impression on you?
It did. I mean, street lights and sidewalks and highways, electric lights. I think we had, if we had them at all, it was real new.
Mm-hmm.
And bathrooms and running water and... It was just really opened up a different world for me.
Mm.
I kept thinking, I got to get out of here. And I kept thinking, if I can make it over this hill right across here, I'll be okay. I can go somewhere. From there, I can go somewhere else.
Mm.
But every time if I made it across the road, Mama yelled, Vanilla, where are you going? I just kept telling her I was going to Frankfort. I didn't have any idea which way Frankfort was, but I thought it had to be on the other side of this hill.
What do you think you were trying to get away from here?
I just wanted more. Mm-hmm. I wanted what I had seen in Frankfort, the stores and, you know, cars and just... I mean, other people had things, you know. Mm-hmm. They weren't still riding horseback and... wagons and all that. I mean, the world had moved along, mm-hmm. and there was stuff. When I went to college, and somebody said you wanted on the telephone, well, I'm standing there looking at the telephone, not knowing, okay, what do I do with mm-hmm. this thing? I mean, I had never used a telephone,
mm-hmm.
had no idea what to do with it. I mean, we were just handicapped in having, you know, not knowing what other people knew in other parts of the town or the state. So it was something I wanted.
Mm.
So I kept saying, when I get old enough, I'm gone, I'm out of here, I'll not come back except to see my mom. It's strange how life rolls around. I got married and went to a town smaller than this. Had my kids. And I left my husband and two little kids and I came back here. My other children were older. They were in college and one was married already. But I said, I'll never go back to Manchester. And look where I am. Right here in the house where I grew up. I was born in the little pink house out
mm-hmm.
there.
It's up on stilts out there.
Mm-hmm. But I thought, never, never, never. And I kept thinking, I said, okay, I won't disturb my kids. They had made friends and gotten settled in school. So
mm-hmm.
I said, okay, I'll stay here and let them get past, you know, moving from one house and one school. I had him in private Catholic school in Oklahoma.
Hmm.
But I figured if they study, they can make it here. Because we only had the little B school up there. That was from kindergarten on through 12th grade. I said, I got out of that and we got to college and made it okay.
Mm-hmm.
I said, the schools are so much better now that they can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. They had no problems.
Mm-hmm.
Of getting in Berea, and then Paul went straight from Berea to Northeastern in Boston and got his master's and his PhD. And Mary came out of Berea as a registered nurse, and she had a degree, too, you know, Bachelor of Science, I guess, in nursing. So I said, well, I just kept staying. By then, my mom had died, and Daddy was getting old, you know. Mm-hmm. He died at 98, but he got so he was bedfast. And so I never found the opportunity to go on, move out. I said, I can't. I'd hear him crying for Mom at night. And I said, I can't go away and leave him like that. So I stayed here. But when I left Oklahoma, I was on my way to New York. Because she said, you can stay with me till you get on your feet. And said, I've made it with two kids up here. You can too.
Who was that? Who was in New York?
My sister, Daisy.
Your sister, Daisy.
But I never made it. I mean, when one something would come up, and then Dad got worse, and when he passed, Paul was in, had graduated college, and he was in Boston. So I said, okay, Paul's out of school and Daddy's gone. Now's my chance to fly out of here. But after I got through with the grieving and the trying to clean out and do things, I said, this does not make any sense. You know, I had no job, and I had gotten much older.
How old were you at that point? Remember?
I was in my 60s, mm-hmm. which is, seems like young now, if I can go back to that. But I kept staying, and I said, why struggle? I mean, here, I said, at least people know me, mm-hmm. and I know people. So I'll just stay here. I won't have to pay rent. So all I had to do was struggle up enough money to pay the utilities, you know. I said, but nobody can put me out of the house. So I'm still here. Because after my sister died, I didn't have any urge to go to New York.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about still being here?
Well, in a way, I'm very, very thankful to God for, you know, for being here. And in another way, I'm disappointed that I never, you know, got up and took off. My brother moved to New York, and my sister had lived in New York till she died. And that's where I always wanted to go. I mean, I got to go and visit, but mm-hmm. I didn't ever make the move.
That seems so... I mean, courageous and amazing to me to, you know, want to just get up and move to mm-hmm. New York, you know, as a young person coming from Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your brother and your sister did it, as you said. What, I mean, did they just go or did they have jobs
already? They had, my sister had a job. My brother started working in Rochester, New York mm-hmm. when he was in high school at Lincoln. He would go up and work through the summers and then come back.
Is that something arranged through the Lincoln Institute? Or?
I think it was. It was mm-hmm. a canning company, a factory or something mm-hmm. that he worked in. And he worked up there several summers. Then when he graduated from high school, he just moved up there. He got married and had a couple of kids. And then somebody told him he had trouble with his lungs. And my dad did too. They said, go to Arizona. I said, you get over that.
Mm-hmm.
So he and his family moved out there. Of course, the girls were grown then. Mm-hmm. He moved to Arizona, and his breathing did get better. So he's still there. His wife now has Alzheimer's. And he takes care of her like she's a two-day-old baby.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen him since 1995. But after I had that stroke, I don't know, it just kind of changed everything around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I used to feel just perfectly okay to call up Frances. She was a travel agent in London mm-hmm. at that time. I'd call her up, Frances, I want to go. Where do you want to go this time, Vanilla, she'd say, and I'd tell her. So she'd get my tickets and stuff to me, and I would just take off and go wherever I wanted. And after my husband died, he left a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. So, which is, I never had anything in the bank, you know, to just pick up and go. But I mean, I went on a couple of tours to Europe mm-hmm. and to Mexico, the Holy Land.
Oh, wow.
And I did not mind just going, get on a plane and go wherever I wanted to.
And you would travel by yourself?
I'd travel by myself. It would be a group, but I wouldn't know any of them, you know, until
right.
we spent a few days together.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I had that stroke, I don't know, things just have, I said, I don't know what it was or what caused it, but my mind got confused.
Mm-hmm.
And I get really nervous. And I said, I don't need to be in an airport
Mm-mm.
with all the crowds and the lines and the trying to get to the gates and all. I said, I could just see myself getting nervous and upset and screaming and crying, you know. I said, they put me, locked me up somewhere. So I haven't taken a trip alone since all that happened. And my son's wife came here and got me, and we went to Salt Lake City together. Mm-hmm. I made it fine, no problem, as long as there's somebody there I can lean on.
Mm-hmm.
I say it's kind of like my cane and my walkers, you know. As long as they're there, I'm okay. But if I go out without them,
mm-hmm.
you know, I keep thinking, yeah, you're gonna fall over. But then I went back to Utah again for his wedding. Of course, my daughter and her son came down and took me to the airport, mm-hmm. and they traveled with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I said that's something I lost with all the stroke and stuff. I just cannot travel like, mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
You don't feel as independent.
I lost that independence.
And your stroke happened 4 years ago? Is that
been 2 years
oh,
ago.
Oh, 2 years ago. Okay. And you also, I mean, lost some function on your right side, is that right?
They said mine, where it hit, sort of in the middle,
mm-hmm.
that I wasn't paralyzed either side, mm-hmm. but I know things happen. You know, like I've always done this kind of work,
crocheting,
and quilting,
yeah.
and I picked up crochet needle, didn't know what to do with
mm-hmm.
it. And I couldn't sew, couldn't do my quilts.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like I wasn't interested in anything. Anything I had been interested in was just gone.
Yeah, you told me that, I mean, right now we're sitting in your living room and we are surrounded by bookshelves.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I visited last time, you told me you lost interest
in reading. And I used to never, I mean, I'd start at the mailbox. If I had a book in there, I ripped it open and mm-hmm. walked up the hill. And I had already looked through it to see what it was doing, you know. And I'd start to read it and I'd come on up here and finish it before I'd do anything else. But I said, now I can't do it. I just don't want to read. And it was just, I love Stephen King, as you can see behind us. I would get his books and I'd start to read it from the mailbox up. So I said, maybe it'll come back, but I don't know. I noticed changes. I said, nobody would notice but me. I mean, some people notice. My hands mm-hmm. shake all, you know, I can't mm-hmm. keep them, I can't control that. And there's just some things that just, I say, I know it had an effect, although mm-hmm. I wasn't paralyzed. I had to kind of learn to walk over again.
Mm-hmm.
Paul stayed here with me that summer. He was on his sabbatical, and I knew he had plans. And I apologized to him. I said, I'm sorry I messed up your sabbatical. He said, Mommy, I wouldn't take $1 million for the experience that you gave me.
Mm.
It scared him, you know. And mm-hmm. But he took care of the situation, got everything straightened out. And he's the one, I couldn't get off. If I'm sitting on a couch, I couldn't get up by myself. And so he would help me get up and said, now go walk around the porch. He says, you got to move around. You can't just sit there. And he told me one day, he said, Mommy, you're going to get the mail today. I said, how am I going down there to get the mail? He says, you're going to walk right down the hill and get the mail. So I got up and I obeyed. I went and got the mail. He said, "I'll see you in 4 hours." That's how slowly I was moving. But I got the mail and came back up. So every day, that was my job. Get up, Mommy, go get the mail. Mm-hmm. And I'd get back, eat, Mommy, take your pills, Mama. I said, I wouldn't have made it without him. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he just, I asked him later, I said, "How'd you put up with me?" He said, "It wasn't bad." Said that you'd get a little stubborn sometimes. I would, too. I didn't want to eat. I had no appetite. Food just tasted like it could have been library paste or something. It didn't. But I've gotten past that now. I was down to 113 pounds. Mm. And I looked in the mirror one day. I got up out of the bed and was getting ready to put my clothes on. And I said, "Oh, my goodness, I look like a skeleton." I said, "No wonder everybody's fussing at me. You got to eat." But I just could not eat enough to start it to come back. My doctor, anyway, put me on Ensure. Mm-hmm. And she upped it to 3 cans a day. And I have put on some weight. But somebody told me yesterday, "You need to put on some more." I said, "Okay, I've weighed 200 and some. I've weighed over 200 pounds at one point." I said, "I don't want it back."
I can't imagine you weighing over 200.
I did.
You're so skinny.
I was real big. And I said, I don't know. I want to gain some, but not. I don't want to get started and can't quit." And they said, "You did before. You lost it, you know." I was always small. And I lost it, and I don't want it back. Mm-hmm. And the nurse got me right on. She says, "I know why you don't eat." Said, "You have that weight, and you don't want it back." And I said, "You're right, I don't want it back." And Paul said, "At your age, you'll never put all mm-hmm. that weight back on." Yeah. But it was there, and I wasn't happy with it.
We were talking about reading before, mm-hmm. and you wanting to leave. And I wonder, did you see education as a way out of the mountains? As a way to go somewhere else?
I think I did when I went to Frankfurt that summer. Mm-hmm. And I went to guess they call them laboratory schools now. But they call theirs a model school for the children of the faculty people. Mm-hmm. And I went to that summer. And, I mean, it was the first real school I had seen. Teachers and bathrooms. And I said, there's other things other than just, you know, the outside toilet and the bucket with the dipper mm-hmm. and all that. And we had no library, and I wanted books. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, if I can go to a place like that, and I said, I don't want to be married and have a bunch of kids before I go to college. Mm. And it was just a dream to see, you know, what people had in other places. And I figured that was my ticket out of here.
So what happened then when you returned? Was it disappointing to come back to Manchester? Or was it? How did you feel about having to come back after spending that year in Frankfurt?
I didn't really want to. Mm-hmm. I didn't really want, you know, I had gotten to know some other children, mm-hmm. and I just wanted to stay. Just wanted to stay out of here. Mm-hmm. But this was home, and Mama and Daddy, and mm-hmm. my sister and brother, and so I came back, and we all, you know, finally got back adjusted to how we were living. But by then, I knew there was more and better things out mm-hmm. there.
And what was your life like here? Can you sort of sketch me a picture? Did you guys farm at all? Did you have a small garden?
Daddy had a garden. He usually kept a cow and some pigs, so we mm-hmm. had our own milk and butter, and it killed pigs in the winter, and Mama canned food, beans, and whatever else she could find to put in a jar. Mm-hmm. And she kind of taught me how. I always helped her. My hand was tiny, so it would go down in the jar, and I washed her jars mm-hmm. and helped her. And we had to carry water. We didn't have a well. My grandfather had one. He lived up the street a little mm-hmm. bit. We had to carry water. And sometimes she would build a fire under the black. I still have the pot sitting outside, a little black pot, and she'd wrap her jars in rags, put them in the pot and build a fire under it and boil them all day. Mm. They'd also do that with the clothes, the white clothes. There probably was no Clorox or anything then. Mm-hmm. They boil the clothes and I don't know, it wasn't a lot of fun because Mama didn't let, we weren't allowed to just go run around the neighborhood or anything.
You had to work with your mother.
We had to be where Mama was. Mm-hmm. And Daddy would take my sister and the little brother with him sometimes, but he'd always tell me, go stay with your mammy.
Were you the oldest daughter? Mm-hmm.
So she taught me to sew, and I wanted to do what she did.
Mm-hmm. And so your mother quilted?
She quilted.
And is that how you learned how to quilt?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about your quilting and your mother's quilting?
I have some of her. I got 3 or 4 of hers in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. I think some of those Wayne took.
Yeah, I saw one of your. I actually saw a quilt, I believe, that your mother had started mm-hmm. and you had finished.
I had finished. Mm-hmm. She had started those, and when I came, when I got cleaning out her closet and stuff upstairs, mm-hmm. I found these quilts, and by then I had learned to really quilt. Mm-hmm. And so I took those out and finished them. Mm. And I found one that I had made when I was a little girl. Mm. I was afraid to do anything to it. I said, that is so old, it'll just probably come right loose. But I still have it.
Did you enjoy quilting? Was it something that you found that you really
liked? I did. It was, I'd sit up here all, I mean, I didn't sleep well at night. Mm-hmm. And after you've been married for that long, you don't, I mean, it just kind of doesn't seem right to be by yourself. Mm-hmm. But I'd sit up and quilt all night and do all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was fun. I still enjoy it, but I can't, mm-hmm. my fingers won't do what I tell them to.
After the stroke, you actually had to learn how to quilt.
Had to learn how to quilt.
Because you'd sort of forgotten?
I can't get my handwriting back to mm-hmm. where it was. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the bank does it. I don't know how they do it. Does every check I write, if I write 3, they're all different signatures. Mm-hmm. I can't write them 2 alike.
What kind of the patterns that I've seen in your quilts, are those all patterns that you learned from your mother, or do you make up some?
I've made up some since then, but those in that picture, like mm-hmm. I mean, I quilted what she had pieced. Mm-hmm. I put the back end and the bat into them and quilted mm-hmm. them. But I have made different patterns. I've got a shelf full of books in there of quilts and patterns.
See, sometimes you'd copy stuff.
I'd copy stuff out of there. And I got a pile of books in the bedroom back there. Mm.
Did you ever quilt with other women or only with your mother?
Mostly my mother, and mm-hmm. I had a friend who used to work over at St. Anne's, and we would get together. We were both learning at the same time. Mm-hmm. So we'd sometimes quilt together. Mm-hmm. But Mama, when she would quilt, sometimes there'd be 6 or 8 women. We didn't have any furniture in here, very mm-hmm. basic. She put up her quilt frame, mm-hmm. and it would be huge. I mean, the size of a quilt. And they rolled it down and make it narrow. And she and some of her friends would get together, and they'd put on a pot of beans or whatever, and they would quilt all day and eat and quilt and talk. And I was always a nosy little kid. They'd call me, Vanilla, come thread 8 so-and-so's needle. And I thought, why are they calling me? You know, they can't say thread a needle. And I just discovered later on when the sight starts to go, I said, I know now why they wanted me to do that, because they couldn't see.
Did you ever sort of sit in and listen to their conversations?
Oh, yes.
Watch them? What kind of stuff would they talk about?
About each other and other neighbors. I remember the one time they called somebody who wasn't there that day. They called her a two-faced helper. And I asked Mom, I said, Mom, what's a two-faced helper? And she said, well, two faces means you got two faces. And a helper, I looked up in the dictionary, and it said a young cow. And she came that one time. They were sitting on the porch. And I kept walking around her chair and looking at her all the way around. I blurted out. Mom said, what are you doing? I said, I'm looking for her other face. Well, she knew right away. They called me a two-faced helper. I said it. So Mama said, we have to watch her. I would sit under the quilt and wait for them, you know. If I went off and started to play, they yelling at me. Come on, let's do this. So I got so I would thread all the needles, and then I could take off and play a little bit. Mom said, you don't say and repeat everything you hear. I said, okay. So I didn't do that again. But I'd sit under there and listen to them. If I didn't understand, I'd ask Mama. Or if I could get the word, I'd look it up. I always wanted to know why and what and how. I guess my poor mother was nearly crazy. As I had my kids, they all went through that.
So you stayed in school, you went all the way through high school, and you went through high school here in Manchester?
I went 3 years here. Then they cut it out. And most of the kids who had gone here to high school went to Barberville or London. And Mama said, I was just 14, and she said, she's too young. But by the next year, she let me go to Lincoln.
And did you board up there?
I boarded up there in the dorm. I didn't even know how to comb my hair. I mean, Mama had done everything for me.
So what was that experience like?
Scary. Really, you know, you all of a sudden, you're by yourself. But there was always some girls or somebody who would help you. I remember I had been sewing some, so we... I don't know whether his skirts went up or down or whatever. Anyway, I had to re-hem my skirts. And I could do that. And some of the other girls would show me how to make them fit. I lost weight when I got to Lincoln. And this girl would roll up my hair on curlers and, you know, and stuff. I said there was always somebody around to help, but I just did not know how to do anything. Like that.
And you would have been only 15 at the time, right?
At the time.
What else was living in the dorm like? What were some
It was kind of fun. I learned a lot of words I shouldn't have been exposed to, but it was kind of fun. I'd never heard that kind of talk around here, you know. But they would use some words, and I picked them up. I got so I could run through the dorm and yell my cuss words right back at them.
Did you make a lot of friends there?
I did. It was fun. A whole bunch of girls get in a room and we'd tell jokes, and some of them weren't too good. They weren't too clean. And I'd never heard any of that kind of stuff. But I didn't. I had the sense enough to keep my mouth shut, so I didn't come home and tell Mama.
What was the school like there? I imagine it was much larger than...
Oh, yeah, it was. I can't remember how many students, but they had a girls' dorm and a boys' dorm. And the faculty people all had little houses around out there. I don't know whether it's still a Job Corps Center or not. But I went back for my 50th reunion. But it was just, I mean, it was good to be out. There wasn't anything there except the school.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pretty strict on, you know, you on your side of the campus, the boys on their side of the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And you better not be caught meeting someplace.
So there was no dating.
There was no dating and out of that. You could go basketball games together or something, you mm-hmm. know. But you weren't, and they come call on Sunday. But other than that, you were locked in at night, and that was it. But it was still fun, better than here.
Why was it better than here? What about it was better?
It was the freedom, I think, to, you mm-hmm. know, to have friends and to run around and talk to people and learn mm-hmm. stuff.
And you didn't have that freedom here because you had to work or because the community was...
The community was kind of, you know, and my mom and dad were kind of strict. You don't mm-hmm. do this, you don't do that. And Mama saw to it that we got into church, mm-hmm. Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're a Christian, you can't do this, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. I joined the Baptist church because she was Baptist.
Mm.
And I couldn't figure. I could never figure out. She'd tell me, "You can't do this if you're a Christian. You can't play cards. You can't dance. You can't sing the blues." I said, "Mama, what can you do?" And I never got the answer to that. What are you supposed to do? And then when I went to college, I met a girl who was Catholic,
mm-hmm.
and. She'd get up, I mean, I know she played boogie-woogie on the piano, and she danced and jitterbugged, and that's what the dance we did back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I mean, she had fun, and I asked her one day, I said, "Marty, what kind of church is it you belong to?" She says, "Oh, I'm Catholic." She said, "But don't bother with it till you find out who you're going to marry." Her parents wouldn't let her marry her boyfriend because he wasn't Catholic, and he was going into the army.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to get married before he left, mm-hmm. but they said, "No, no, no." So I listened to her. And then after I got out of college and went to Louisiana, I met some people who were Catholic, and the kids off the campus would line up on Sunday, and they'd be going to they had mass in the theater out in the town.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd get up every morning and go join the line and go to church. And that was my first step. I went up the one Sunday. He was still standing there. And I went up. I said, "Father, what do you do to be Catholic?" And he was sort of snappy. He says, "Get somebody to instruct you." And he never said anything else.
Hmm.
Well, I skipped a Sunday or two, and then I went back, and there was another priest there. I went up and talked to him. So he stood right there in his tracks and made arrangements. "Where will you be on this day or that day? You know, what's your work schedule?" And he figured it out where we could meet and have our class. And the girl I worked with and my sister, Daisy, we all went and started a class. And he started to teach us. And... we kept at it till we finished the classes. And he said it went on. He wrote to me. It's been out since my kids had been grown. And told me that that class that we started lasted 20-something years. Mm-hmm. Well, I said, well, I came home and I had books and papers and stuff that I had been using. Mama picked them up and read them. She said, "You know, this is what I've always believed."
Hmm.
So she started to read all my stuff and learned it. And then she went and talked to the priest. But by then, there was a priest here in the church. So she went and talked to him. And my mom ended up becoming Catholic. Her sister-in-law and her husband both dead they all took instructions, but Mama's the only one who went through with it. So she became Catholic. My sister stayed Catholic. Aunt Phrony guy was baptized on the same Good Friday Mama had died. And it was so funny. I said, if it had been an ordinary occasion, I would have laughed out loud in church. I couldn't help it. I said, there's a question that they ask you when you're taking, you know, finished and you're going into the church. And it says, do you, that's how it goes, do you forsake evil and the devil and all his works? And she looked up with big old eyes, and she looked at the priest. She says, no, sir, I don't. And if it hadn't been such a sad time, I mean, I would have laughed my head off just to see her face. And he was having a hard time keeping his laughter in. So she became Catholic, but neither of the husbands did.
Mm-hmm. What about Catholicism? You know, initially you said that you were sort of looking for, you know, well, what do? And you met your friend who is Catholic and who seemed to really enjoy life,
mm-hmm.
but was also a Christian. What else about Catholicism drew you to convert?
I understood what it was about. After I studied, and I started to go to Mass and talk to people. And, I mean, it was something I could understand. I didn't understand, with the Baptists, that you can't do this, you can't do that. I said, what can you do? And I never did get an answer to that. But I watched Marty, and because, she did all the things that they told me I couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be a Christian, you can't be both. You got to give up this and give up that. And I kept asking, what's wrong with dancing? What's wrong with singing the blues? And nobody would ever tell me what's wrong with it. You just can't do it. That's for other people, not for Christians. That's all the fun things. I said, no. But, you know, I said it wasn't wrong in the Catholic Church. It was not wrong to enjoy life and to have fun. It said in the Bible, rejoice and be glad. And I said, it didn't say anything about, I said, I didn't see where it says don't dance. After I got to really reading the Bible, I said, I don't see this. Where did it come from?
Mm. I know one of the things that I noticed the first time I came to visit you was, you know, you do have a lot of the Catholic imagery, a lot of the Virgin Marys around, and then I looked down at your bookshelf and you have a bunch of works by Thomas Merton, and I was very, very impressed by that, because not a lot of people know who Thomas Merton is. Yeah. Do you like his work? Contemplative tradition?
I used to go to Gethsemane. You know where that is?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I used to go to Gethsemane for retreats. So we went and stayed a week one time. And then I got so every time I'd go, I'd run to the library first and try to find the new books before they got checked out. I mean, they weren't new, but they were, you know, the editions I hadn't read.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his life and how he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, now that tells you more than don't do. I said, all the other way was negative.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, you don't, which makes me want to do. You tell me I can't do something, I'm going to do it whether I really want to or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a stubborn little cuss. And
what about that type of practice did you like? You said you liked that way of life.
Yeah, I did. You know, and I said, didn't seem like as years went by, we got so we couldn't get to go to retreats and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, well, I don't need to go somewhere for a retreat. I retreat all the time. I'm alone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but I still like Gethsemane. It's mm-hmm. just so peaceful there. Mm-hmm. So it used to be a bunch of volunteers at St. Anne's. So you could always get a ride where you needed to go. Mm-hmm. So that was good.
Mm-hmm. And now they don't?
They don't have the volunteers anymore. And it's just hard to, you know, after you get loose and get broken off from doing something, it's hard to get started again. Mm-hmm. But I do like Thomas Merton. I kept buying his books and buying his books, and then we'd swap around and read each other's books.
You and people at your church at mm-hmm. St. Anne's?
At St. Anne's. Mm-hmm. I miss the kids being there. They're not kids, I mean, they're college, and some of them had mm-hmm. finished college. Mm-hmm. They just take out some time to do some what they thought would be helpful to other young people. Mm-hmm. But I just, I don't know. There's been a couple of ladies. There was one at first, she came by, she's a Jehovah Witness. Mm-hmm. And she came through here, and she was sitting down, and she says, you don't have to tell me, I know you're Catholic. I said, how do you know I'm Catholic? And she just looked around, you know. I said, well, I guess you can't really miss it. But I said, I put something in it all through the house, out of every room, I said, mm-hmm. It just helps me keep on track. Mm. Keeps my thinking straight.
Do you find that, because I know I went to Catholic school.
You did?
Mm-hmm. In Corbin, first through high school.
Oh, St. Camilla?
Mm-hmm, St. Camilla's, yeah. And I know I remember some of the older nuns talked about, you know, when the convent and everything first came, and they actually got a lot of resistance from the community. Did you experience that? I mean, because most people in this area are Baptist or Holiness, mm-hmm. Pentecostal. You know, I imagine that the Catholic Church here is sort of small.
It's small.
Did you feel like you were... you know, making yourself sort of a outsider, you know, from the rest of the community, or did anybody ever say anything to you about converting? Or?
Not really, because I had been gone from, I've stayed in Oklahoma like 25 years, mm-hmm. and I had broken any ties I had around here, mm-hmm. and I had belonged to St. Mary's Church in Oklahoma, and then they had St. Anne's, and it's right there. Mm-hmm. It was in East Manchester, but they moved it right there. And I said, they moved it close so I could just walk right mm-hmm. across the field. And it just seemed to be perfect setup. And then when I started to work over there, they just kept getting more and more and more. So practically, I was running the place. And I had more than I could do. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it. But I said, no. If I said, I went to Lisa Wagers, and I started going to Charismatic Mass over in Lexington. Mm-hmm. And we'd go every month, and they'd have it. And we kind of got connected with that. So when we would go over at St. Anne's, and they started to have charismatic kind of things, and I said, you know, I like this. So, I mean, it was different.
Yeah, what did you like about the charismatic?
It's sort of like Pentecostal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it was a lot of emotions mm-hmm. and feelings and shouting and people getting slain in the spirit and mm-hmm. talking in tongues. Mm-hmm. I said, this is neat. Mm-hmm. And, I said, the priests go along with it and join in and help. I said, that's, I mean, it's different, but it's, I like it. So that still goes on. They have one in London. Hmm. I think it's the first or second Monday of the month. We've been going over there. But it's just...
Do you have sort of... do you have mystical experiences ever within the service? Where you feel like you, the Holy Spirit?
I used to when we went all the time. Mm-hmm. We went to their prayer meetings and stuff. And I know that one time my daughter was there and her mm-hmm. two little kids. She didn't have April then. And I got slain in the spirit and mm-hmm. I'm laying on the floor. And it was like there was somebody standing. I'm laying out on the floor mm-hmm. and somebody standing right over my head. I asked my daughter, I said, who was standing there? She said, nobody. She said, I had to go chase Matthew down a time or two to catch up with him. Said, but I was in the church most of the time. She said, nobody was standing close. I told this other lady about it, and she said, now you know who was standing there. And I said, no, I don't. I said, but it was somebody who loved me more than anybody I think had ever loved me before. And she just looked at me and laughed. She says, now come on, you know who it was. And I said, well, I think it was Jesus, but I'm not sure. You know, would he do that? And she just laughed. So I think that was some kind of an experience. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it seemed like all the good stuff goes so long and then it kind of breaks off and it's hard to get going again. Mm-hmm. But I know when I was saying my prayers that one time, I was just in the bedroom, and I was doing my prayers, and all this, I mean, I thought it sounded like gibberish. I'd heard people pray in tongues and stuff. So, I mean, all of a sudden, it just started to bubble up and come out, and I says, now what is this? I go back to the same lady, Judy. Mm-hmm. And she said, it's all right, you were speaking in tongues. And I said, well, I want to do it again. But I couldn't. It just didn't happen all the time. But I don't know. It's just something I enjoy. I said, there's nothing wrong with having fun and worshiping God and having fun with it. Mm-hmm. To, enjoying yourself at the same time. But I said, I wish it would come back. But I really belong to Sacred Heart Church. That's where I registered.
Oh, okay. That's the church that's connected to St. Camillus.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were over there Sunday, this past mm-hmm. Sunday. But I like it a lot, Father Emphill. Mm-hmm. We got Father Vinny's pastor now. But it's just, it's life experiences.
Did you ever get to, talking about before, you said you wanted to sing the blues and dance. Mm-hmm. Did you get to do that too?
I tried. Yeah, but I said I couldn't see anything wrong. Along with it. Mm-hmm. But when I was away in school, I would, go to dances and mm-hmm. stuff and keep up with all the latest songs. I hear the kids doing now. Mm-hmm. My daughter and Tevin, her son, he loves music, so mm-hmm. he plays the keyboard. Mm-hmm. He wanted piano lessons so he could learn to read music.
Oh, wow.
So he had his keyboard and I'd hear him in here playing and singing. I said, music's music. It's not either right or wrong. It's just a good sound. If you like the sound, it's okay. I don't think there's wrong. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever play an instrument or?
Guitar.
You did? When you were young or?
Well, it's been a few years ago. I used to play over at church.
Oh.
I picked it up, took it out of the closet and picked it up the other day, and I said, how did I carry this thing around? It felt so heavy, I couldn't even hold it right. So I said, there's something else I lost. Mm-hmm. I'd have forgotten how you do the cords, mm-hmm. and I couldn't manage that thing. It seemed so big.
But you learned to play the guitar as an adult,
mm-hmm.
later. And did you just play hymn music, or did you play?
I got a, what's that guy? What's that guy's name? John Denver.
Mm-hmm. John Denver. I got a book.
Yeah, I got a songbook from him, and I got some of his tapes, cassettes. And I tried to do some John Denver. I'd play whatever I could find. Mm. I tried. And then I quit, and that was just gone. I said, but if I could have held the thing. But I said, that wears me out just to try to hold it.
Mm.
But I liked it. I used to really like it.
What kind of music did you listen to? When you were a young person?
Oh, let's see, before I went away to school,
mm-hmm.
all we had was a radio, and it played country music all the time. I never was that fond of country music,
mm-hmm.
but I did like blues and jazz.
Mm-hmm.
After I bought a cassette player and stuff, well, that's the kind of music I'd buy.
What kind of, do you remember what artists you like? Who were some of your favorites?
Let me see. Glenn Miller, mm-hmm. the big man.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him. And what's that other guy that plays the guitar? Oh, what's his name?
Is he a jazz or blues musician?
He does a little of both.
Mm.
He's a black guy. What's his name? He does something on a commercial now.
Oh, is it B.B. King?
B.B. King, that's him. B.B.
Hmm.
King. Mm.
But how did you get exposed to that? Because did you hear that on the radio at all? Or?
Some of the kids had record players and stuff, and I got to hear those. And it was just, I don't know. I'd hear something I liked, and I'd keep on looking around till I'd find it, because I didn't have anything here to play it on.
Mm.
But radios got better. Mm. We had the first radio we had was the size of that thing over there.
The size of a dresser.
It was static and carry on.
Mm. Do you remember what kind of stations or what kind of radio shows you'd pick up at all?
What did we get on the radio? Mama listened to her soap shows,
mm-hmm.
Ma Perkins and Guiding
mm-hmm.
Light, and
mm-hmm.
there was a whole bunch of those we used to listen to. The dark, no, let's see, what is it? The Screeching Door and the scary ones, I like mm-hmm. those. I can't remember can't remember the name of the show.
Mm.
The Shadow Knows.
Mm.
And I used to listen to those when it was clear enough to get something. But we had that big old radio. It used to be in that corner right there, and it filled up that whole space.
Mm.
I always liked the blues and the jazz.
We'll go back for a minute. You said that you went 3 years to high school, and then you had to wait. You went
to Lincoln.
Lincoln. And did you graduate from Lincoln?
I graduated from Lincoln.
Okay. And then from Lincoln, did you go to Kentucky?
Kentucky State.
Kentucky. You went directly there?
Mm-hmm.
And did you have any kind of scholarship or anything? Or did you have to pay at that time?
We paid. I remember that here the kids now, they thought, Mom, you got to be lying. I said, I'm not lying. But Daddy gave me $50.
Mm-hmm.
Made Mama pin it into my bra, sew it into my bra. he wanted me to give it to somebody to keep for me. And the lady over the dorm said, give it to her. It's her money, isn't it? And she said, yeah. So they finally, he worked out with Mama to fasten it in there. I'd never had more than a dollar or two, you know. He didn't want to leave $50 with me.
Right.
But that paid my tuition.
Wow.
Room and board for a month. And bought my books, and then I'd have some left over, and I'd run downtown to the 5- and 10-cent store, Woolworths, I think it was, back then, and buy socks and stuff that, you know, I didn't have. I don't know, they would, I had, we could wear, we had to wear stockings, those little cotton rib, tan colored, and a garter around here.
So was there sort of a dress code then?
That's what Mom and Daddy wanted. It wasn't for school.
It wasn't for school. That's what your parents wanted.
That's what
you to
they
wear.
Wanted. But the little anklets that were okay with me, they didn't like those. So when I got my extra money, I'd go buy some anklets. And
did they think that was inappropriate?
That was inappropriate. Can't wear those. But you could roll down the long stockings and have a roll down here, which looked horrible.
Yeah.
But that was their dress code.
What was Kentucky State College like at that time? What was entering as a freshman? What was that experience like?
It was good because I'd been away from home for a year already. So I had gotten used to that, you know, and gotten used to meeting people and talking to people. And I liked that. So some of the kids were homesick and were crying, and I'd go around and comfort everybody I could find, bawling for Mama and Daddy. And I'd tell them, it'll be all right in a week or two, you'll forget. Which they did.
And you lived in a dorm there?
Lived in a dorm. And most times you had a roommate. And, but that was good experience.
Was it a lot more freedom than at Lincoln Ridge?
A little bit more. You could go when you wanted to go. You could go downtown. Of course, there wasn't a town. You had to walk to Shelbyville or Simpsonville somewhere to get something. But there at Kentucky State, I used to do it. If I ran out of paper or something, the first bell would ring and the second bell would ring 10 minutes later. So I'd take off down the hill to get what I needed and run back up the hill on time for the next class. So it was fun just to be able to get out and go.
So what year did you start Kentucky College, Kentucky State College?
42.
42, okay.
And graduated in 46.
Okay. What'd you end up studying?
I started majoring in business. They didn't have equipment, so what I needed for to get a business training was, we only had one. Did they call it a calculator? Even it was had the handle. I guess it was a sort of calculator. We only had one, and there was one boy in our class, so they let him take that class, and he majored in business. And that machine stood between me and business, so I took, he helped me figure out a name for my major. It was commercial teacher education. Almost everything you took at Kentucky State ended up with a teaching degree.
What was that?
You had to get a certificate to be...
You know, a
teacher. I think social work, social sciences would come out with a, didn't have to have a teaching degree, that they had to be like a social worker or something. But it was just little, and it wasn't too much. I don't know how many students. I used to know exactly. It seemed like we had 100 or so women and 9. We had less than 90 guys on the wartime. And then you'd see them going and leaving with their bags on their back. That was sad times. I managed to find a boyfriend.
So you found a boyfriend at college?
I found a boyfriend at college.
Was this who became your husband, or was this just a boyfriend?
No, just a boyfriend.
What was he like? What did he do there?
He was nice. You know, after we left school, I don't know where he went. Mm-hmm. I lost contact with him. I met my husband in Louisiana when I got a job after I graduated high from college. Mm-hmm. I went to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, mm-hmm. to Southern, and worked there 3 years, and I met him there.
What were you doing down there? You said you went to Southern.
I worked in the registrar's office.
Okay.
Keeping the files and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I met my troubles. My blessings, too, I guess. I think I got my kids. So I'd probably do the same thing over again.
Mm-hmm. What was your husband like?
I thought he was great, you know, at first.
Mm-hmm.
But so we went to Oklahoma and lived there.
Was he from Louisiana?
No, he's from Arkansas.
Oh, he was from Arkansas. So he was he going to school there or working?
He was working.
Okay. And then you guys moved to Oklahoma for work?
He had a job.
Okay.
He applied for a job for me.
Mm-hmm.
I found this letter much later. He'd gotten upset because he'd lost some papers.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I must have moved them.
Mm.
Well, I hadn't. But I went searching through the house to find them, and I got into this trunk that I had never looked in. Because I hadn't bothered his things that mm-hmm. he had, you know, his personal stuff. But I got looking and I found the letter that said, he always told me he was working on his doctorate degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this folder, this letter, where he had applied to Langston for a job for me, and he misspelled words, and the typing wasn't the greatest. And I said, he should have let me apply myself. You know, I wouldn't have done that. So I never got a job at Lincoln, mm-hmm. at Langston. But I thought he was a great guy. I thought he was so good looking.
What year did you get married?
46. It wasn't 46. It's 49.
Did you get married in Louisiana?
Got married right here.
Oh, so you guys came back
mm-hmm.
to Manchester?
Yeah. Got married and then went back to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Did you start having children then when you
went to Oklahoma? I did. Jimmy was, we got married in August of 49, and I had my first baby in June of 50.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, but I'd been married 3 years, I had three kids. And there was 7.5 years between my oldest daughter and my youngest daughter.
Mm.
And then Paul came along when I was 40.
Mm.
I told him, I said, by the time you graduate from school, I said, I'll be so old, I'll come to graduation with my girdle on top of my clothes. He laughed. He reminded me of saying that.
Mm.
He said, Mama, I see you got your girdle on in the right place.
Did you like living in Oklahoma?
No.
No? What
Mm-mm.
didn't you like about it?
I didn't like a thing about it. It was flat and hot and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And the grass, by this time of the year, had turned brown and it would crackle when you stepped on it.
Mm-hmm.
And no trees. And that's what I started to appreciate Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I said, there's greenery, there's trees and hills.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's just flat, nothing. Mm-hmm. And I never liked it.
Where in Oklahoma were you again?
It was Langston.
Langston, Oklahoma, okay.
About 12 miles out from Guthrie.
Mm-hmm.
And Guthrie used to be the capital. They stole the seal and took it to Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
After then, they made Oklahoma City the capital.
Mm-hmm.
And Guthrie used to be the capital. They stole the seal and took it to Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
after then, they made Oklahoma City the capital.
So we left off just a couple minutes ago, and we were talking about when you were married and in Oklahoma. And you said once that your husband got on the campus, he started running around and showing up with other women.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you do about that? Did you guys get a divorce, or did
No.
you stay with him?
I stayed with him.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept on till we had 5 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And my 3 older ones were... One was still in college, the other 2 had graduated, and my oldest child had married.
Mm.
And my oldest daughter had moved in with a friend. They had gotten up an apartment together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I left there and came here.
Without your husband?
Without my husband.
And your children?
And I brought Paul and Mary. Paul was 12, Mary was 6.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's the other way around. Paul was 6 and Mary was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And Clarice had her own apartment mm-hmm. with a friend. And Bobby, who had just gotten a job in New York. So we can't left Langston with Bobby and came here.
Mm-hmm.
And then... Clarice was in college at OSU. And after we left, she left college and came down here and went to EKU, where she met her husband. And they got married, and now they have 3 kids, 2 grown ones and a 17-year-old who feels like she's 45. And...
Did you move back in with your parents when you first came home?
I did. Well, Mama was practically helpless, and Daddy was. He couldn't walk.
Hmm.
If he was sitting in his recliner and he wanted to go to bed, the only way he could make it was to slip down on the floor and crawl and pull up to get in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well... There's no use trying to make some arrangements because they need me night and day. He would lay there and yell for Mama,
mm-hmm.
because she was upstairs, and I was afraid for her to use those stairs are
mm-hmm.
steep. So I took over taking care of the 2 of them, plus my brother's 2 daughters. He and his wife had separated.
Mm-hmm.
So he brought his daughters down. And I had a handful with my 2 kids and his 2 kids and Mama and Daddy.
Hmm.
So.
Did your husband ever come back?
No, he came down to visit. He'd come down quite often to visit.
Mm-hmm.
But then he'd go back. I said he came down and started a war between the 2 kids. He would take Paul and buy him parts for his train set, but he wouldn't take Mary with him to shop,
mm-hmm.
and a girl of that age, she wanted clothes, and,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't give her any attention. She'd be dressing as fast as she could, and he'd run, jump in the car, and leave,
mm-hmm.
leave her crying. So when Paul got back, the 2 of them would have words. But so I got to the point, I said, I wish he would just stay out there. But he kept coming back. And I stayed at work. I worked overtime and everything.
Where were you working at?
Over at St. Anne's.
Mm-hmm.
And he would sit down and talk to my dad. The last few times he came, they'd spend time together.
Did your parents like him at that point?
Yeah, they got along okay. But, I think he was a little bit afraid to act up with Daddy
mm-hmm.
around. Daddy had a pistol in each pocket. He always did. Or in his waistband, he'd stick it in. I don't know how he kept it there. that he'd carry his guns all the time. But they got along okay. But he died in 1987.
Was he still living out in Oklahoma?
He was still in Oklahoma. And, he didn't tell anybody he was sick. He kept having blackouts, and he went to the Veterans Hospital. And they had been testing him. They didn't find anything. Everything was, you know, okay. But he went in the bathroom and fell. And then when they got him, he was dead. So my oldest son was living there in Oklahoma. He had some cousins in Oklahoma City, but he didn't tell them he was sick. So I think I said that he probably didn't even realize what was going on. But anyway, I got the kids all together and got their plane tickets, and me and the four kids went out there. But I said, things happen in strange ways and for strange reasons that I don't understand. But after I left, he didn't take my name off his bank accounts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think my oldest son found about 6 accounts after he had died, and he waited till he got all the mail, and he got a lawyer, and he checked into everything. So when I called the Social Security, well, I wrote a note first, I think, and they called me. Because I wanted to get, my son was in, Paul was in college,
mm-hmm.
and I needed some help for him, you know, to keep up. So Social Security called me back, and they said, well, we can't get it for your son, said, but you just happen to be the right age that you can draw almost as much as he did. So he called back, we did all the stuff on the telephone, and then I got my check. So I started to help Paul and then get finished up with paying his tuition and stuff.
How did you put 5 children through college?
The first 3 had to get He earned too much to get any grants and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but he got bank loans for the 3 older ones,
mm-hmm.
so they paid and paid and paid for years to get that all taken care of. But Mary and Paul went to Berea,
right.
and they had guaranteed Paul 6 years, tuition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mary got the same thing. So they went there. I know Mary went 5 years, and Paul was ready to graduate. And he said, Mom, I'm not ready to go out. Let's get out of school. And I said, why not? And he says, I'm just not ready. And I said, what are you going to do? He says, I'm going to take some classes in social science and, have a second major. And he did, so he stayed there 6 years, 5 years. And then he came out of there after he graduated from Berea and says, I'm going to grad school. And I said, oh, Paul, I said, how are we going to make it? And he said, don't worry about it. I said, I got it fixed. I didn't know you could get help for grad school.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to Boston, to Northeastern, and started on his master's, and then he got his PhD. And after he got that, he went to Columbus Ohio, what's that, Columbia?
OSU?
OSU. Oh, what is it?
Columbus,
That university. He went stayed there. He worked there 3 years on his postdoctorate work. Then he started looking for jobs, and I wondered, I mean, he got jobs and close in, like Ohio, Kentucky, and Virginia, and around, but he decided he wanted to go to Salt Lake, and he went to Salt Lake City, and I kept thinking, well, he's all settled in, and I thought, well, he had bought a used car. It was a nice little car, and so I expected him in the next news would be, Mommy, I got a new car. But no, I didn't know my child as well as I thought I did. I said his next news was, Mommy, I bought a house.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, oh, my goodness. I didn't think about a house. I'm thinking car. And he bought a house, a big house. And must have been like 10 years ago, a little longer, I guess, now. And I said, he's got a girl somewhere. I said, he hadn't told me. You know, I'm thinking, he's thinking housekeeping. But he had met his the girl that he liked. It was a freshman, the first year at Berea. But they didn't start getting together. And she had married and had a daughter. And but they started to see each other. And I think that same year that I got sick in Virginia, and he had his sabbatical, they started to see each other. And I teased him. I got sick and had to go to the emergency room. And they kept me overnight. And my friend told me, she said, Paul's girlfriend was there. And I says, where? I said, I didn't see her. And he said, Mama, don't fuss at me. I said, you chicken. I said, you brought your girlfriend down to see me and I'm sick and you didn't even introduce us. He said, Mama, she stood right by your bed. And I said, I didn't see her. Because I didn't remember being in the hospital, didn't remember any of that. It just blanked out. And when I finally did get to see her and know who she was, I said, I didn't see you. I've never seen you before in my life. And I said, I didn't know a thing about it. But I got to know her. She kept coming to see me and stuff, and we got to be friends. And I told Paul, I said, I've adopted her legally. I said, she's my daughter. And now she's your sister. You can't marry her. And they sat there and laughed and laughed about that. But they did end up getting married. And I said, well, I didn't want him to stay single. He's 38. And I said, I didn't want him to, you know, have to live by himself all this time. All, you know, I said, it's not that great. And so she came out, her folks were in Danville, and her daughter lived in Berea with her dad. So she got to coming out to visit, and she painted this room for me and that room for me. And we just got to be clear, we got talking and just enjoyed each other. So I was happy that he got married. Somebody told me, said, I know why you're sick. And I said, why am I sick? She said, because Paul's getting married. I said, no, that wouldn't make me sick. I said, I'm glad he's not going to be alone. Because it's no fun, I said, to be alone. So they got married. They had a beautiful wedding. And I got to go.
Now I'm going to ask you another question that's unrelated to what we've been talking about. Where does your name come from? How did you get the name Vanilla? Do you know?
My mom said my daddy named me, and I was about 3 months old, and they didn't call, they just called me baby. Mm-hmm. And she said, and then my Aunt Froni told me that he liked to drink a lot, and he would drink all the flavoring they had in the house, the vanilla extract and stuff. And she said that's what he named me for. But he never would say he did. He said, no, I wasn't talking about that. He was trying to name me Manila, but he spelled it with a V. Mm. So that's how I got stuck with that, which I hated for years.
Why did you hate it?
I don't know, I just didn't like it.
So we were talking about your name. We left off, and you were saying that your father, there was some debate about why he named you Vanilla.
Mm-hmm. But his sister kept saying, telling me that it was because he drank up all the vanilla flavor and they could keep it for him drinking it up. I don't know whether that's the truth or that was her version. So I guess the real basic reason will never come up.
But you hated that name?
Mm-hmm. Until I got, I guess I was probably 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. And some guy came up and he said, do you taste like vanilla? And he kissed me on the cheek. And after that I said, okay, my name's all right. But that's where it came from. And then my sister was born, and they named her Daisy. Because my dad had a sister named Daisy. He also had a girlfriend named Daisy. Mm-hmm. Mama says he didn't name, he says he named her for his sister. And I say he named her for his girlfriend. So there's a mystery with her name, too. We don't know where she got hers. But I met a cousin, Sunday. Her grandmother was named Daisy, and she's named Daisy. And her other, her Carrie, there's Carrie and Georgie. And they both have Daisies in their family. Mm-hmm. Yeah, plus my sister, Daisy. But Mama said it's the girlfriend, wasn't his sister. My brother was named after my dad, so there's no question about him.
Mm-hmm. Vanilla, what were, when you were growing up, when you were younger, as a child, did you think about race at all, living in the community that you lived in? Because it would have been predominantly, you know, white, being in Clay County, being in Manchester. Did that have any recognizable effects on you?
Not really. We all kind of played together, and the families, you know, if one family had a problem, everybody would go help. You know, I didn't know there was a racial problem, you know. We all played together. We mostly looked at each other's hair. How'd your hair get like that, and how did you keep yours like that? And we would talk about stuff. But there wasn't really that one little girl that we used to talk to, and she'd come by and play sometimes. And I came home once, I'd been downtown, and I had passed her on the street with some other girls, and she wouldn't look at me, and she wouldn't speak. And I told my mother when I came, I said, Elizabeth didn't even look at me. And she says, oh, don't pay attention to it. Said, that happens sometimes. And she's with some of her other friends that she won't talk to you. And I thought, well, if she can't talk to me when she's on the street, I don't want her to come talking to me now. And Mama said, don't be like that. Just forget about it. So I never, there was no problem, really.
Did you ever become, when would you say you became conscious of sort of the larger nation and what it was going through as far as race relations?
I guess I really didn't pay that much attention to it because, you know, our high school was all black and mm-hmm. our college was all black. Mm-hmm. And there was no opportunity to mix, really. Until I went to Louisiana, I was grown by then. And they had in stores, they would have two water fountains, and mm-hmm. one says white and one says colored. And my friend and I, she was from Missouri, we were always doing silly kind of stuff, which could have got us in trouble, but it so happened it didn't. We were talking, we said, wonder if that water over there tastes any different than this water over here. So we went to the white water, and then we went to the colored water. And we were laughing and said, it's all water. But, I mean, they had arrested people for doing less stuff than that. Mm-hmm. But they either didn't see us or else they didn't pay any attention to it. But that's when I noticed that, you know, the separation. Because around here there wasn't any such things. There was, you know, it's pretty much like Manchester now. There's not a whole lot around. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have any restaurants, any place you could sit out and eat or mm-hmm. be bothered with that. So I really, and then when I was in Louisiana, I went to pay a bill for a friend. I saw a line, I got into it to go pay it, and they wouldn't let me go all the way up with that line. They said, you go there. And I thought, I said, well, this is not my bill. I said, I don't know where I'm supposed to go. Mm-hmm. But I went where she pointed. And the girl gave me a dirty look, but, you know, she went on and took it. But there was a lot that, you know, that just didn't come up.
Mm-hmm. Did you follow the civil rights at all, the movement on, in the news?
It was later, much later on that mm-hmm. I got to, I guess it's when those, who was the little girls that took the police and everybody to take them to school? Mm-hmm. And I thought,
Ruby Bridges,
the sit-ins and all that, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, there didn't seem to be any problem around here with, you know, the name-calling and stuff would happen. The people would just beat up on each other or shoot at each other or set the barn on fire or something. But I didn't notice any big, you know, thing going on with it.
But you said people would shoot at each other and set barns on fire?
Mm-hmm.
Was that a race-related thing, or just people?
Just people that are angry in general.
Yeah.
They would do mean things to people.
Yeah. How have you seen the African-American community in Manchester change over the years?
Well, the job situation, I think, is responsible for a lot of that. There's no jobs around here, so people started to go to Cincinnati, Louisville, Lexington to find work.
Mm-hmm.
I guess most races have to get out of here and go find something to live with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep wishing they'd have some industry, bring some industry into
mm-hmm.
There aren't that many black people left.
Mm-hmm. But now, last weekend was Manchester Homecoming.
The Homecoming.
And I know you said you weren't able to go, but, I mean, that draws over 1,000 people. doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it pulls people back home. But I usually go, but I didn't. I don't think I went last year. I hate to go everywhere hobbling on a stick or a walker or something. But there's not that many of my generation hobbling any kind of way. And the youngsters, they got to go away to work, right. And so they marry and live somewhere else.
Do you wish that, you had said before, you wish the industry would come in?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you hope for the future that there will be something
I hope to
keep people here?
So people could stay at home and work.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff is so expensive. It's hard to have to go away and work and pay most of it for rent or someplace to live. It'd be much easier if they could stay put and work at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could get ahead somewhere along the line.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed like I saw an old video my friend had made off of the History Channel about Clay County. It said the salt industry used to be the big thing, and there was a lot of trouble over that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was salt and coal mining, and there just doesn't seem to be in anything stable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of looks like it's still like that. I can't understand. I mean, you know, Manchester's not a whole lot, but, you know, people could live cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Here than in most places.
They had something to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would really like to talk about?
There's some things I've been made aware of since I've not been, you know, feeling able to get out and do things.
Mm-hmm.
Some made me appreciate the help that's given to people.
Mm-hmm.
Either the needy or the people like in my shape where they can't get up and get out. The home health programs and Meals on Wheels and that sort of thing. I said I didn't know they even had that until I got sick. But it's been such an important part of my life for the last couple of years. You know, somebody to come in and do things for you. I said, I had no idea. Because I took care of my mom and dad, and we didn't have any help. But I guess because I was living with them, that made them ineligible. Of course, my dad's income was, probably too high.
You think it would have been too high?
Probably.
Even working for the mine, it would have been too high to...
Yeah, but then when he was able to go to the mines, he wasn't... he had no real bad health problems.
Right.
He had some asthma attacks once in a while, but he just called the doctor up, and they used to play together. They were kids, and he'd come sit here with him, give him a shot, and wait till he got, you know, cleared up.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that... He had his black lung and veterans check, and what else did he? There was something, Social Security, he was drawing. He had income. And my mother had her teacher retirement. So I guess it's... Because they do limit your income, you know, if one person by herself, I think you got to make you got to draw less than, I think, is it 11,000 or something like that.
So for you, those programs have really been important.
They've been really important. Because I said I've got to meet people and talk mm-hmm. to people. And, you know, they come in and help. It was yesterday that this girl, what's her name, Diane? It was back in November, last November, that I started to hemorrhage, and I didn't realize what it was. It didn't look like blood to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know there was anything wrong. I got up that morning, and somebody's knocking on the door. It was really early and foggy. And I got out of bed and went to the door and let her in. She'd come to help me take my shower. And she was apologizing for bothering me so early. But I said, honey, I've never been so glad to see somebody. I said, I got problems. I needed somebody. And so she came on in and helped me. I went back through to the bedroom, and I sat down on the bed, and she went on in through the bathroom. And I said, Diane, I still needed my shower anyway. And she says, honey, you forget about the shower and everything else. She says, just show me where your clothes are. And I pointed to the closet. She went over there and started pulling out stuff. And she sat down on the floor and started helping me put on my clothes. Mm-hmm. And I said, Diane, I can't go somewhere like this. I said, I got to have a shower. She said, you forget the shower and everything. She said, just let me get some clothes. She got the clothes, and she went through the bathroom, and I sat on the bed, and she said, did you know this commode is half full of bright red blood? And I said, no, I didn't know that, because I hadn't looked. I just got up, and I guess I used the bathroom and mm-hmm. came on to let her in. And so she got on the phone. My friend Sandy had tried to talk me into going to the doctor the night before, and I said, oh, Sandy, I got an appointment for the next day. I said, I'll just wait. Mm-hmm. I said, it'd be gone by tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I'll get you in tomorrow then. But I got there, and she said that, and she got me up and just put some clothes on me. And Sandy called both of them called the 911. And I looked up, and here come these guys in the house. And they grabbed me, put me on that stretcher, and out the door they went with me. And I couldn't figure what in the world is going on. I didn't hurt. I didn't feel bad. All I felt was like my legs had turned to rubber. I couldn't walk, couldn't move them. So they took me to the hospital, took me over here. And then I think I stayed there all day and that night. And they transferred me to UK. I said, if that child had not come when she did, I wouldn't have passed up that bed. I'd have gone back to bed and laid there and bled to death. Mm-hmm. I just about lost all the blood I had.
Oh, my goodness.
And I told her, I said, she came yesterday. Mm-hmm. She just started work. She had a car wreck, and she's got, mm-hmm. She limps. She's got broke her leg in a couple of places. I was so glad to see her, because I had lost her phone number. The old one she gave me, they'd changed. And she'd called me, and I missed her call. But I was so glad to see her. I told her, I said, if it hadn't been for you, I would have been gone. Because I wouldn't have passed that bed. If I'd gone right back in that bed and laid there and bled. But it didn't look like blood. Mm. My son fussed at me. He says, Mama, you didn't tell me everything. I said, Paul, I told you all I knew. All I knew was that it was something that wasn't normal to have all this black. It looked more like tar than anything else. And I said I wasn't sure what it was or what was happening. So they got me over there and sent me to UK and started transfusions. I had 8 units of blood and 2 colonoscopes down this way and 2 up the other way. And that man was sitting in the hall. I don't know who he was. He was a doctor, an older doctor. And he said, young lady, he said, you're a very sick young lady. I said, no, I'm not. I said, I'm an old sick old lady. And he kind of laughed and he looked at me. And I said, I never heard a doctor sit there and say that to somebody, you know. I didn't feel sick. They had me in bed laying down and I felt all right. Ended up staying over there about a week.
Wow.
Down in intensive care. The doctors and the interns and all, they'd come in and stand around the wall and talk. And I'd hear bits and pieces of stuff and wonder, what in the world is going on? I'm not sick. I don't feel sick.
That's amazing.
But they kept talking about what the blood, whatever you call it, the units or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked somebody who was standing there, I said, what's that mean? How much is my blood supposed to be? And he said, not less than 12. And said, yours is down to 6.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, well, I said, I'm still not, I don't feel sick. I was about gone. Didn't know it. I said, this is all it is to die, and you just lay there and go. But it was scary. You know, when I stopped and thought about it, but at that point right there, I wasn't even nervous. It didn't bother me. And I looked up, and I was laying there in the bed, and in walks. I looked up and looked at it. I told the foot of the bed, and there sat my daughter and her son and my second son, oldest son. I said, how did they get here? What's going on? Bobby was on his way back to Missouri. And somebody, Paul had called him, I guess, and then Paul came in. And there they sat, and I said, well, maybe I am sick. But I didn't know it. It's weird. And I was shocked when I stayed over there. And then they said, you can go home today. But you'll need somebody to stay with you at least a couple of nights.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, I'm fine. I don't need anybody. I can make it. I'm okay. I came home, and Paul was here. I said, Paul, I need to get my hussy out of retirement. Hussy is what I call my walker. He went upstairs to get it. I went in the bathroom, didn't do a thing but fall off the commode on the floor. I wasn't hurt, but I couldn't get up. So I'm just sitting in there yelling, Paul. And he said, what's the matter? I said, I can't get up. So he grabbed the walker and he came down. And I'm grabbing towels to cover up. And he got me up and put me back in the bed. And I said, what in the world is going on? I said, Paul, what's wrong with me? He didn't really know. But I could not stand up. I could not walk. I couldn't get up from a sitting position. Then he picked me up and got me back in bed and covered me up. And I still didn't think I was sick. Now my doctor came and she said, you almost had a bleed out. Well, I didn't know what that was exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But then it went on, and I ran into the doctor that I had over there. Mm-hmm. She was an intern. And she says, I am so glad to see that you made it. They weren't expecting I'd make it.
Oh, my goodness.
But
I can't believe you didn't feel bad. You
never know. And then, I mean, I've had worse time than when they said I had the stroke. Mm-hmm. I couldn't really walk. I understood that, but I couldn't understand why losing a little blood's going to make you not able to walk. I talked to Mary, my daughter's a nurse, and she said, yeah, when you lose that much, said, you're not getting oxygen to your brain, and you she went on to tell me. I said, oh, my heavens. Maybe scared.
She came out okay, so.
It worked out. I said, that's great, you know. Then I keep wondering, okay. I've been out there raking grass and piling it up and dragging it. I said, no, that is body movement up here,
right.
Not in my stomach. But they said what it was an old ulcer.
Wow.
Or maybe one that is working on me now.
Wow.
I did not know. And I said, I'm asking somebody to play God, tell me it won't come back. Well, I said, they don't know either. But there it was. And I'm still struggling to get around off that last, that happened in November. But I said, it's getting close to a year.
Vanilla, do you want to talk about anything else that has to do with your life? Anything that we might not have asked about or we might not have touched on? That you'd like recorded. And if you think of something later, I can come back.
Okay.
I don't want to put you on the spot.
Well, I know faith has, and believing God has helped me pull through where, you know, so far as I am. I feel like that he watches over me and takes care of me in more than just this instant. I mean, he just kind of arranged things, because when I was, you know, before I got to be 60 and stuff, I kept telling my son, I said, if I owned this house, I wouldn't be able to keep it. I said, I couldn't pay the utility bills. And I thought there was just no way I could make it. And we finally worked out, well, I could block up most of the house and just use a couple of rooms. I said the bathroom and kitchen would have to work. Of course, he had finished his school and he was gone. But I still thought, he came home one weekend and we lived in that back room, a son and daughter and I. And I had stuff all sitting around in here. He said, Mama, you said you weren't going to use all the house. And I said, I'm not. He said, what's all this? But I said, I know that God takes care of us. And I said, it was a miracle to me that Paul's sabbatical and my illness and him meeting, Jean meeting up and getting back with Jenny, I said, it was all fixed. It was all like John laid out on a blueprint. And I said, I just have to keep trusting in God. And I would tell anybody, you know, that's the way to make it. Just to love God and trust Him and obey Him.
Well, Vanilla, thank you for talking to me today.